looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
3-2 again. High fly ball. Well hit. Deep left. Back, back, back. Gone! Shohei Ohtani, say hello to Mookie Betts. His third of the season. A heck of an at-bat. He touches them all, and the Sox lead it 1-0.
So let me get this out of the way right off the top, okay? Ohtani sucked last night. He sucked. Okay, so I know a lot of you, there was a guy in particular who called the show late yesterday, and welcome into the Baseball Reporters, by the way. There was a guy who called the show late yesterday and said, oh, you're already putting Ohtani in the Hall of Fame. No, I'm not. I'm just telling you, I believe in the guy's ability. Okay, I believe in Ohtani's ability. So you want to get on me about Shohei Ohtani and how the Red Sox took the bats and absolutely shoved them down Ohtani's throats last night in Ohtani's throat? I don't think he has more than one, Murray. In Anaheim last night, fine, you can go ahead and do that. You should be happy with your baseball team. Again, statement performance, if you ask me. Hottest team in baseball other than the Red Sox was the Angels, and the Red Sox went out there and beat the snot out of them last night in Anaheim. 10-1 was the final score. Ohtani lasted two innings, and frankly, I don't care whether he has a blister on his finger or not. If you're on the mound, you're expected to perform. That's the only thing you can go by as a fan of any sport or a viewer. If a guy is healthy enough to play, then he's expected to perform. If he doesn't perform, it's on him. Either you're out there or you're not. Like, there's just no way around that, except for extremely rare cases. But to me, if you don't think you can pitch, don't go on the mound. And Ohtani did. He apparently has a blister on his finger, or at least that's the story. 617-779-0985. And let me tell you now also that if you want to talk about the Red Sox, call now. Call in the first segment because we interviewed Alex Cora today, or I did, I should say, and we are going to play the Alex Cora interview later on in the program, so we're not going to have a ton of time for phone calls. If you want to talk about the Red Sox and that win last night and Mookie Betts, by all means, 617-779-0985. So here you go. Your baseball team is 14-2. David Price, for all intents and purposes, gave you a pretty good outing last night. Five innings, one run, he walked four, which I didn't love to see, but nonetheless, overall, clearly threw the ball a hell of a lot better than he did in Boston against the Yankees, and it certainly appeared as if he had all feeling and sensation back in his fingers. And by the way, that is something I asked Alex Cora about, the history of the problems with David Price, and so you'll get some answers there. We covered a lot of ground with the manager. We don't often get a chance to talk to Cora. Obviously, we don't broadcast Red Sox games, and so when we get the opportunity to speak with them, to me, it's a chance to catch up on a lot of different topics and some big picture issues. And so, again, we covered a lot of ground with them, and I think it's worth the listen. So, again, we'll play that a little bit later in the program. 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls here right away, and we'll kick it off with excuse me, Scott, who's in Connecticut. Go ahead, Scott.
Maz, what's up, buddy?
What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk about Ohtani real quick. I was disappointed. I was actually, you know, looking for a good matchup, but I saw an interview with Socha. Apparently, he's actually had some slight blister problems in the past, and the baseball he's throwing now is different than the baseball that he throws in Japan. So if you go back and watch it, they're in Southern California, and he's constantly blowing into his hand. And you can actually watch the video and see the blister on his palm, and he was picking at his fingertips the entire time he was out there. So I think it's valid that he had blisters. And like you said, yeah, if you're not healthy, don't be out there. Well, they only left him out there for two innings because he wasn't healthy.
Okay, so Scott, here's what I would tell you. Do I think something was going on with him last night? I do. And honestly, all you had to do was watch the pitches. The split-fingered fastballs he was throwing were bouncing in the dirt. They weren't even close. So it's not as if he was missing by, or, you know, the ball wouldn't come down. He was up in the strike zone. He's bouncing him 2 feet before the plate, and he's bouncing him in the other batter's box. So he wasn't even close. So do I think something was going on? Sure. Was it the blister? I don't know. Was it the fact that he had 8 days of rest instead of his customary six? I don't know. Was it the fact that it was a full house in Anaheim and he was facing a good lineup? I don't know. Was it a combination of all three? I don't have the answer for you. But I don't take back anything I said last night. I still think the guy is one of the great stories in the game, and I still think he's going to be a candidate, a contender, for the Cy Young Award. Evan's in a car. Go ahead, Evan.
Hey, Maz. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you, you know, I'm happy about the Sox doing well, but I have trouble trusting the team, and they're so inconsistent. Do you think that Mookie's power is going to last when Hanley inevitably cools off and the rest of the lineup starts to kind of get shaky? Do you think his power can still be there when the rest of the lineup isn't swinging?
So, Evan, yeah, look, I think Mookie's power is, you know, Mookie's power is legit. He's got, he clearly had 31 home runs 2 years ago. The only thing I've ever said about Mookie Betts, and you can look at the three home runs last night as evidence, his power is all pull power. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, that is the, well, there's a little wrong with it, but the large majority of guys in the game have pull power. I mean, you're not in the big leagues without being able to hit the ball out of the ballpark on some level. Some level. Now, Mookie's got good pull power, particularly if you throw him fastballs. But he does not have opposite field power because he's 5'10" and 185 pounds, or whatever he is. So to me, the really dangerous hitters in the game are the guys who you can pitch away, down, up, off speed, fastballs, and they're always a threat to hit it out. Those are the guys that are truly dangerous hitters in the game. I'd put Hanley in that group when he's dialed in, and I'm starting to think J.D. Martinez is in that group. I need to see more of the opposite field power. But based on what we saw in that first homestand, and again, he homered into the bullpens over the weekend against the Orioles, and he came close another time or two, it looks to me like he can hit him out of any ballpark and in any direction. Those are the guys that scare you when you step in the box. Mookie, love him as a player. But he doesn't terrify me the way other guys do. Let me try that again. Matt is in Sharon. Go, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. How are you today?
Good. What do you got?
I was just, I wanted to say, I don't think that what you said about Shohei Ohtani was very ridiculous. I think that he's going to be a great player. However, Cy Young, that's a stretch. Not just because of who he is, but because of his competition in the American League. I mean, look at the guys that he's going up against. You know what I mean?
So, listen, I understand the field is deep. I'm just telling you, look for a dominating season. Jimmy Stewart or Jim Murray, do me a favor. Would you look up Yu Darvish's numbers in his first year in the American League? Would
sure.
You? Or in the major leagues? I'd like to know. I think a lot of these guys come over and they have an advantage in their first year because they're unknown. Then all of a sudden you look up halfway through the season and they're, you know, 10-2 with a 2.7 ERA. And for that matter, look up Tanaka, too, if you would. Would you get Jimmy on Murray on
16-9, first year, 3.90 ERA, 29 games started.
Okay, so he wasn't quite as good as I thought, but I'd be
second year, 13-9, 2.83 ERA, 32 games started.
Okay, and what about Tanaka?
Tanaka was 13-5 with a 2.77 earned run average.
Okay, and then he got hurt, I think. Right, so Tanaka was in the running there for a little while. I know that. And Hideo Nomo came over and had a huge impact at the beginning. I'm going back a ways now.
Daisuke
won 17 games, I think. Pitched 200 innings. So
fell off his third year.
No, look, the caller's right. You know, Chris Sale, Corey Kluber, Verlander. Like, there are some guys in the league that are legit. After watching this guy's first two games, the stuff. I think he's legit. Josh is in Rhode Island. Go, Josh.
Hi, Matt. So I just want to see if you kind of change your tune a little bit about the Red Sox power. I know they're not leading the league in home runs, but they are number one in ops, maybe slugging percentage and doubles and a lot of that. And they're doing it also pretty good pitchers like Severino. They chased this guy, Ohtani, last night, Dylan Bundy. A lot of these guys have been getting some good power off of. And that's really with no Bogarts in the lineup right now. J.D. Martinez underperforming a little bit to his contract. But obviously with Hanley coming around and, you know, Devers hitting on an absolute moonshot last night, I'm very hopeful of the power problem like that was very evident last year. I think a lot of that has been corrected with some of the approach that the new staff has taken, and I kind of hope that you kind of approach that in the interview coming up. I can't wait to hear it, and I hope he keeps Mookie Betts first. Don't get this, put him in the third spot order. Thank you.
Okay, so Josh, I'll tell you, here's what I've noticed with the lineup. And again, I've written about this already a little bit on the website, 98.5thesportshub.com. And if you haven't been there, we do have a new element of the show on that website as well, the Baseball Reporter's blog, Behind the Seams. And to me, it's not the home runs. So this is an important distinction to make, so I'm glad the caller brought it up. It's not just about the home runs. It's about the extra base hits, too. But what I do like about the home runs is the approach with men on base. The Red Sox didn't hit a grand slam all last season. This year, they've got three. Because guys didn't go up there looking to just punch singles to the opposite field. When you've got the pitcher on the ropes, go for the haymaker. Go for the knockout. So what you're seeing now is more extra base hits with men on base. Instead of guys taking a conservative defensive approach, guys are being more aggressive and trying to drive the ball. So look, ultimately, do I think it's going to lead to more homers? Yes, I do. I also think Fenway's a tough park to hit home runs in. So it's a doubles ballpark. So I don't know how many, unless you have Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz in the middle of your lineup, and now maybe they do again, we'll see, over the long term. But unless you have those guys in the middle of your lineup, you're not going to be among the American League leaders in home runs. They should not be last, however. So six last night, three by Betts. So maybe those numbers will start to creep up. I still think the keys to the lineup are Ramirez and Martinez in the middle of the batting order. But to me, it's about the extra base hits with men on. When you get two men on, three men on, you start hitting doubles and homers. Now you're scoring two runs at a pop. Okay? And you're not just nickel and diamond people. And that'll make all the difference in the world.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Steve is in Carver. Steve, go ahead.
Mads. So it's clear that the Red Sox this season have really wanted to take care of their pitchers, primarily Price and Chris Sale, by limiting their innings and pitch count. So I think maybe they can go to a six-man rotation and keep Hector Velasquez up as a sixth pitcher. This kid is 5-1 with a 3.2 ERA in his career, and every time he goes out there, he gives them great starts. You can go with Brian Johnson, too. So they have the bodies that they can go to a six-man rotation. I don't know what your thoughts on that would be.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. Normally, I would say no way, but I would entertain it. I would entertain it. And, if you get that many guys pitching well, it's a good problem to have. Now, off the top of my head, I don't know who has options. I know that Brian Johnson does not, meaning they can't send him to the minor leagues without putting him on waivers. Okay, so if you want to keep Johnson, right now Johnson's pitching out of the bullpen, essentially. So it gets a little tricky there, but it's not something I would completely rule out. Again, the Angels are doing it, and it's not a bad way to minimize workload. Most teams don't do it because you don't have the depth. And also, you are paying guys a certain amount of money. In the case of the Red Sox, they're clearly looking at October. As I mentioned earlier, we had the opportunity to speak with Alex Cora today. We recorded the interview early this afternoon. Red Sox are playing on the West Coast, so the timing's a little off. But we covered a wide range of topics with him. We haven't had the chance to talk to the manager of the Red Sox on this show in a long time. So I thought it was a good opportunity to try to connect with Cora, especially at the start of the year. And we started with a softball. What do you want me to tell you? I mean, I asked him right at the beginning. There's no way that he thought they would be 14-2 when he took this job.
You're right. But one thing for sure, the way we play in spring training, and I know wins and losses don't matter, but we're playing good baseball. I've been saying it all along, catching the ball, running the bases well, and pitching. And towards the end, I felt that we were going to play well in the beginning. I'm not talking about, this record, but at least, we were going to win series. And the guys have done an outstanding job staying the course, doing the things that help us to win on a daily basis, and I'm very proud of them.
Okay, so look, we don't get the chance to talk frequently with the manager of the Red Sox, and certainly this is the first time we've had a chance to talk to you. So I want to rewind here for a second, because I want to cover a number of things with you if we can do that. And one is David Price, who obviously got back on the mound last night, and it looked from the very beginning part of that game that he clearly had a better feel than he did against the Yankees when he was having problems with sensitivity in his hand. So He mentioned, Alex, that this is something he has dealt with for a long time. Does he have some sort of condition that makes his hand get cold and he loses sensitivity in cold weather?
Honestly, Tony, when it came up, I was surprised. But then throughout the day and the days after the start, I got a little bit of information about it. One thing for sure, the next day he played catch and he told me, hey, I'll be ready for the next one. And he actually wanted to pitch on Monday, obviously, with the rain, it was postponed. But I was thinking more, what's the point of pitching him in at home? There's a chance that there's going to be rain delays. Obviously, the weather wasn't going to help him. So I decided to pitch him on Tuesday. And as you saw yesterday, control was there from the get-go. He was the debut price we are accustomed to. But this is something I'm learning. I'm learning on the fly. I'm learning about this condition. It happened to him in Detroit, and he bounced back afterwards, and he was fine. So, like I said before, I'm learning about this, and we'll keep attacking the issue the way we should, and hopefully he doesn't miss any more starts because of what happened.
Okay, so look, Alex, a lot of people are speculating, myself included. Like, I get on the internet, I start Googling, and I say, what is this thing? And I come across something called Raynaud's syndrome, where people's hands get cold in cold weather and they lose sensitivity. It's a real condition. Is that what he has?
Honestly, Tony, this is the first time I heard that word. So I'm not sure. Honestly, that's something that obviously, now that you bring it up, I'll sit down with Brad and talk to our medical department and see where we at. But there's no reason to panic. There's no reason this is just an episode that happened and that outing, but there's no red flags, and we saw the results yesterday. This guy, he prepares better than a lot of big league pitchers. I see the work that he puts in. I see the work that he puts in during the game, to stay loose and stay ready. So, for me, I have no concerns, but now that you bring it up, I'll sit down with the medical department and see what word you just use, and we'll go from there.
Okay, so you mentioned that he said it happened to him once in Detroit, and you can understand why we might be interested in this, because he himself said after that game against the Yankees, Alex, that this could have been Game 7 of the World Series. The weather in October is not going to be good. His October history is not great. To your knowledge, has anything like this ever happened to him in October?
Not that I know. Not that I know. Where he pitched in the playoffs, he was in Detroit, but there were a few outings, I think, in the Rogers Center in those playoffs. I know he had one in Texas for the wildcard game. He pitched in 2008, indoors, although he pitched in the World Series after that. And last year, he looked well. He looked good against the Houston Astros. So, this is something new for me, and I'm learning on the fly. So, that's as much as I can tell you right now. And, we're going to keep finding stuff and keep going to learning about this condition. But like I said before, we're not worried about it. He's not worried about it. So, we keep going according to plan, and he's going to make his next start.
Okay, so just to clarify and make sure, when this happened, you had no knowledge that this thing had even existed with him?
No, no knowledge.
Let me move on to Xander Bogaerts here, because he was off to a tremendous start. I did see today where you're not expecting him back here for a little bit. I know you said you don't want to bring him back in on the turf in Toronto by the end of this trip. But do you expect we'll see him after that when the team returns home?
Well, the way he moved yesterday, taking ground balls and during batting practice, I can't rule that out. It looks like he's making strides. He's looking better. Obviously, this is something that it's all about him and what he can tolerate. But like I said before, I don't want Xander Bogaerts to go out there and play shortstop at 85%. I want this kid to be close to 100%, that he can move, he can run the bases, he has his base at the plate, and we can see when he has his base, he's very dangerous at the plate. So, we'll go with the plan right now, but it looks like he's making strides. But I don't want to put a date on him, because it's not fair for him. It's not fair for the team. We're playing good baseball. I don't want to put this kid in a tough situation that he feels that he has to come back sooner rather than later. And then, he's not the player that we saw the first few weeks of the season.
Okay, so just again, you're not ruling out the end of the trip yet?
Not really now anything. You know, it seems like he's making strides. And yesterday he took ground balls at third base because we didn't want him to move as short. It was ground balls right at him. And then batting practice was amazing. But he still have to run the bases. He still have to turn the old plays. There's a lot of stuff that goes before the games that he has to do for him to convince me that he's ready to play.
Okay. And look, you've made it clear with regard to pitchers and your starters this spring and even into the season that you're going to be careful, manage them for the long haul. With Bogaerts, Alex, the last 3 years, 156 games played, 157 games played. Last year, the number dropped to 148, but he did get hit by a pitch in the hand. So, again, you know, the point is he's playing 155 games, basically, the last 3 years. Do you have any sort of long-term plan for him? Because he's a guy that has faded a little bit in the second half of these last few seasons.
Well, as you can see, and I know a lot of people are worried, quote-unquote, especially those fantasy baseball players, you know, the days off are for real here. The reason is I know they have extra days off right now, but for this to work, you know, we got to give guys days off, and they're going to benefit from it late in the season. And one of the guys that I recognized when I got the job and in spring training is Xander Bogaerts. He's a physical guy, you know, he's very athletic. We're talking about 6'3", shortstop, and he plays, you know, he played every day, almost every day the last few years. And for him to have a day off before, let's say it's a Monday off, so I'll give him Sunday, that's two off days, he's going to benefit from it. And same thing is going to happen with Mookie, same thing with Andrew, with Jackie, with Hanley and JD. You know, we're going to take care of these guys. I feel like on a daily basis, regardless of who we play, we're going to have a good offensive team, you know. Our bench right now is Mitch Moreland, Brock Hall, who puts good at bats, Su-Wei Lin, who's played great. So I feel very comfortable using those guys in certain days, and I don't think our offense is going to suffer from it.
So do you have a number in your head for those guys? Like, do you say, I want to keep them around 150? Is that like an idea, or lower, higher? You know, do you have a number?
No, I don't have a number. I just go by the week and who we're facing and how I feel that, you know, where they at. And I learned that last year from A.J. Hinch. There were times that Jose Altuve, he was on a hot streak, and he was getting on base three times a day for five straight days. And you know what? He's a small guy. He's light, you know, and a day off will benefit him. And even though he was hot, you know, he understood that that day off was going to make him better. So we'll go with the eye test. We go with the matchups, and it's more about feel, really, instead of, you know, X amount of days.
Okay, you mentioned the guys on your bench, and I don't think there's any question. You have a lot of options there. I want to go back to something against the Yankees last week. The one game in the series that you lost, Alex, you're down 10-7 late.
We lost.
Okay. I meant you, plural. How about that?
Oh, okay.
Sandy Leon went up to hit for Brock Holt with a couple of guys on base. Why Leon there? Why not Blake Swihart?
We feel that Handy's a good fastball hitter, and, you know, right-hander, his strength. So we felt that it was a better matchup, Sandy over Swihart.
Okay. So I was just curious because obviously you're not a ton of right-handed options on the bench at the moment. It was one of those two guys, and I was curious as to why Leon over Swihart. You just like him better from the right side and more power from the right side.
Yeah, we felt it was a better matchup for us.
Okay. So I don't know why that was bugging me. That's the part one of the Alex Cora interview, but that thing last week when Sandy Leon hit over Swihart, Murray, you remember this, bugged the crap out of me.
Yep.
They don't have many right-handed options on the bench. But at least I know he has a theory on it, right? They believe that Leon's a better fastball hitter. He's better from the right side. They're looking for some sort of extra base hit there. And so he went to Leon. I'd have gone to Swihart, but again, as we like to say on the afternoon show, some people like chocolate, some people like vanilla.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
If you listen to this program, you know that I think Hanley Ramirez has been one of the really great developments for the Red Sox in the early part of the year. Hanley, to me, has been their MVP, at least before last night. Maybe Mookie has now crept into that area, because Mookie's been good from the beginning, too. Hanley, I just expected less from, and he's been terrific. And it feels like Alex Cora has been able to get through to Hanley where John Farrell could not. And maybe that is all more of a reflection on John Farrell than it is anything else. Or maybe it's about Hanley, because we all know Hanley can be a pain in the ass. So again, we interviewed Alex Cora today, and I asked him, what was his relationship with, like with Hanley going into this? Did he have any prior relationship that allowed Hanley to trust him more than he might have trusted someone else?
We were teammates in 2006. I was there for his first big league game in Tampa.
Okay.
And then throughout the years, we play against each other. Joey, my brother, he coached him in, I think he coached him in Miami, if I'm not mistaken. But just like any other relationship, you know, we play against each other, but nothing like personal, you know. And when I flew to Miami this year to see him, see Christian, I saw a few guys there, and he was rehabbing from his shoulder surgery, and the first thing he told me, hey, Alex, you don't have to worry about me this year. I'm like, what that means? He's like, I'm healthy, I'll be fine. And then throughout the months, you know, the conversations start, you know, getting deeper. It's more about baseball. And one thing I told him, when Hanley is hitting the ball to right center, left center, he's a very dangerous hitter. There's a guy that, you know, on base percentage is high when he's doing that. His OPS is way up. And I told him, hey, 250 with 25 homers or 300 with 20 home runs. And he took the 320. And when he's using the whole field, he's a more dangerous hitter than when he's trying to pull the ball. And that's what he's doing right now. There's a lot of traffic in front of him. He's staying in the middle of the field, and he's doing a good job offensively right now.
So the reason I ask you about him, Alex, is that, and look, you've been around the game for a long time. Your whole family has. Hanley has a reputation of being a guy that is hard to get through to, that managers have had difficulty with, maybe even teammates. How have you been able to get through to him?
First of all, he's in a good place physically. You don't know how these guys react when they're hurt, you know, if they're more quiet or they go to the corner and they don't want to interact with coaches or players because they don't feel capable that they can perform the way they're supposed to. But from day one, he's been great. We have daily conversations. The other day, he came out of the game when he got hit, and I call him. I say, hey, about giving you 2 days off. He's like, no, just give me one and I'll let you know about the next one. Give me a chance to see how I feel, and we go from there. So I'm being open with him. You know, he's a two-way street. You know, he's sincere with me. I'm the same way with him, and it has worked, you know. And when another thing, you know, winning helps, you know, that's always a good medicine, you know, for the clubhouse and the chemistry and all that. And he's one of the leaders in there. He's doing a good job with Devers. He's helping Nunez, Eduardo Rodriguez, all the Latino kids, you know. I know for some people it's ironic to say, but they're looking up to Hanley, and I like that. You know, I challenge him to be a leader, and he's doing a good job.
Do you think he has it in him to be a leader? I mean, a lot of people would hear that. And again, remember, he came up in this system, Alex. He had some immaturity issues in the minors. And mm-hmm. So a lot of people would hear Hanley is a leader. No way, not a million years. Do you think he has that capability?
He shows up every day, you know, the work he puts in the gym and taking care of his body and doing his work in the cage and taking ground balls and playing catch, running, you know. There's people that they're vocal leaders and others lead by example, and right now he's leading by example. So, you know, I'm good with him. You know, I'm good with a lot of guys in that clubhouse that they're doing a great job, you know, helping young kids and helping themselves, the veterans. So, you know, I consider him a leader of this team.
I want to stay in that Yankee series for a second. You mentioned that he got hit by a pitch. The night before, obviously, he had a bench-clearing incident. I know earlier in the year you had indicated when the comeback against Tampa Bay that you made a mistake. You should have taken J.D. Martinez out of the game, and, you know, you sort of got swept up in the excitement of it all. In the aftermath of that bench-clearing incident with the Yankees, obviously you had an exchange with Phil Nevin there. Do you regret it?
Yeah, I regret it because there's a lot of people watching, including my daughter, you know, and she didn't like it. But one thing, like I told the media and I told the players, you know, I took exception that he was screaming at me from their dugout, and I acted, you know, not on my, how can I say it, the way I've been acting, you know, the way I am, you know. It was something that out of the norm for me. And I regret the pointing at him and drawing the box. But, you know, the reason, I don't regret it. So, you know, I just leave it at that.
So you said you had no history with him as a player when you both played.
No, he played for the Padres. And I mean, he was the best player in the Padres, you know. I was the utility guy with the Dodgers, so, you know, I never had anything against him. You know, I respect him as a player. I thought he was really, really good, and that's about it.
Okay, he had a reputation as a player of being a little bit of a hothead. I mean, so did his reputation as a player influence your response in that game last week?
No, I think I don't want my coaches to be screaming at Aaron Boone or Gabe Kapler or Kevin Cash. There's a line that you have to follow. You know, you got the manager, you got the coaches. I'm not saying the manager is way up there in this chain of command, but if Booney was the one screaming at me, it was okay, because I think he's the spokesman of the New York Yankees, and if he didn't agree with the hit by pitch, or he agreed that the slide was clean, well, so be it. But, you know, for him to scream at me from the other side, I took exception.
Well, you mentioned Boone there, first of all. Did you ever talk to Boone? You said you wouldn't talk to Nevin about it. You would talk to Boone. Did you ever connect with him?
Yeah, I talked to him. I talked to him after, the next day or 2 days after, you know. And, you know, we talk about the situation, and everything is good. You know, he understood where I was coming from. He didn't like my, you know, what I did. And it's not the first time we disagree in something. You know, we did it on the desk in ESPN, and I think we're going to disagree in a lot of things like the upcoming years.
And do you think that the whole thing with the Yankees is over? Do you anticipate any sort of retaliation when you play them next?
I don't know. I think if we're thinking about retaliation, and if something is going to happen, it's going to take us out of our game. You know, right now, offensively, we can't be thinking that somebody's going to hit us or anything. Just keep hunting pitches right down the middle. And if you get hit, well, you know, you get hit, but you can't be thinking about stuff like that. I think, you know, our goal here is to win every series that we play. And when we play them, that's going to be the main goal.
In the early part of the year, Alex, you guys are getting thrown out on the bases a lot. And I noticed that a number of those were coming on balls in the dirt that the catcher blocked and your runners went anyway, and then they were thrown out. And I started to wonder if, you know, Tom Goodwin's your first base coach. He was obviously extremely fast as a base runner. He was a good base runner and an aggressive one. And there are organizations that preach that philosophy of, if the ball's in the dirt, you go. No matter what, you go, because the chances of the catcher fielding it cleanly and making the throw, more often than not, he's going to get you. Do you have any sort of philosophy like that? And did you change it at all? Because certainly the base running seems to have been better here in the last week plus.
Yeah, it's getting better, but it's still a work in progress. One thing, you know, with this organization, they've been preaching be aggressive, be aggressive, be aggressive. So it's not that easy just to go from that state, you know, from that state of mind to, you know, what we want. And first of all, I mean, Wilson Ramos in the scouting report, you know, he's a guy that he'll block the ball. He's going to take him a while to get to the ball, and then he's not accurate throwing to second. Well, he was the other way around against us. You know, it's the first series, he's fresh, and he did an outstanding job. But we made some bad decisions, and we know it. And we're still working. I think there's a lot of things that go into the dirt balls. You know, who picks the ball? You know, who picks it? Like Yadi Molina, he doesn't block the ball. He picks it like a first baseman. There's others that will block it, and they take a while to get to the ball. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. We talk to the players, but I think the last few games, they've been better at it. There's situations that, you know, if you're up three, up four, we don't mind them to be more aggressive, you know, keep adding on and put pressure on the defense. And we're going to pick our spots, but, you know, all around, you know, I'll give our base running in a scale from 1 to 10. They're at 5 right now, you know, and it was at 1 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. So they're getting better.
Okay.
We're happy with them.
I'm actually glad to hear 5. That's a fair grade at this stage. Just got, well, no, if you told me 7 or 8,
and
I was.
They know it too. And they know it too, Tony.
Well, if it was 7 or 8, I was going to tell you were crazy. The last question I have for you before we let you go. Much was made of the organization hiring Tony La Russa after they hired you. Have you had any interaction with La Russa since the season started? And how often do you talk to him? What do you talk to him about?
We talk about base. I mean, we talk probably every day. He's around, you know, especially in Boston. He's always around.
So you're talking to him that much every day.
Yeah, I enjoy talking to him. And most of the time it's not about the team. You know, it's about baseball experiences, you know, his teams or life, you know. Going out to dinner with Tony is unreal, you know, because he has so many so many stories. I'm a baseball fan, so, you know, he talks, I listen, and I ask questions about his teams and the way he handled a few things. And, you know, he's going to help me out. But one thing for sure, he doesn't like coming into my office in Boston because he feels, you know, that that's my office and I got to, you know, keep learning while at the job. But for me, it's the other way around, Tony. I text him, I call him, hey, come down, man. And I enjoy having him around. He's not only helping me, but he, as you know, our coaching staff is young too. Ramon Vasquez, Andy Barquette, Carlos Seblez. So he's another resource, you know. He's a baseball Bible, you know, and we're using him, and he's helping us to be better.
Have you asked him about any specific game stuff? Like, for example, did he say to you, hey, you should have got Martinez out of that game in left field? Was he the one that brought it to your attention or no?
Nah, nobody brought it to my attention, man. It was right in front of me, and actually he came up when Craig made the first pitch of that inning. But, hey, man, I'm a rookie manager. Everybody knows it. I'm learning the job, but, you know, I'm going to try to make as less mistakes possible while at the job, while I'm learning. And, you know, I'm surrounded by a lot of good people. Ron Renicki, especially this guy, you know, he managed in the big leagues. He's been around Mike Socha for a lot of years, and, you know, he's going to help me out.
Are you at all hoping for any tougher games in terms of decisions here so that, you know, come late in the year you might be more prepared, or you're okay with these 10-1 games all the time?
Tony, man, I like winning. You know, if it's 2-1, it's 2-1. If it's 10-1, it's 10-1. You know, we can't control that. But one thing for sure, we're going to be prepared every day. I have to be prepared. And whenever I make a decision, I'm not going to, you know, sometimes I'm going to understand that I made a mistake. And then with time, I'm not going to repeat myself.
Alex, listen, we appreciate the time here. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, Tony, man. Take care.
All right, you too. Alex Cora, manager of the Red Sox, and we thank him for his time.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.